Alright, today is February 28th, 2021. This is Mobile Views Podcast 353. I'm Tyler Gosford with my good friend John Westfall. And today we've got another special guest, not as far flung as Arnie Hess and Elio Diamant, but Ray Flores is about, what do you think, Ray? About 3,000 miles from me? That's far flung enough.
That seems accurate.
Let's see. Las Vegas to Honolulu.
Let's Google this.
The flights are 8 hours. So, we're talking 2,756 miles.
I was close. I was close.
Pretty close.
Yeah. So Ray is in Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada. John is in Mississippi. I'm in Honolulu. So he's kind of geographically smack dab in between us. He's a lot closer to me,
because he's 1,600 miles from me. Well, he's 1,600 from me and 700 to you. So
still counts as a far-flung friend that we haven't spoken. Yeah, actually, the unique thing about Ray is back when he was in California, I actually stopped by and we were able to chat for a few minutes in San Francisco back in 2017. Yeah, 2017.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Less than 4 years ago. So that was really nice. So he's one of the few far flung friends I've actually seen in person. Like, not socially safe distant. There's a picture of us like a foot apart, which we could not do anymore. But but that was nice to see. So but before we get started, Ray, as you're the majority of the podcast. I just wanted to revisit two things. Thing number one is the headset I'm wearing right now to talk to Ray and to John. So about 8 days ago, I got a Anker Soundcore Live Q30, which is an $80 headphones, over-the-ear headphones for podcasting. And John knows I've gone through, I don't know, half a dozen microphones, including a really nice Blue Ice that works really well. Yeti, Blue Ice, Blue, whatever the heck it's called.
Blue Yeti.
I think I also have the ice, the snowball looking thing. And that sounds great, but it's kind of, if I twist my head when I have two monitors, the sound kind of fades out. And I've tried a bunch of headsets and they all sound good, by the way. And I've tried a bunch, but every one, for some reason, when I'm talking to people on Microsoft Teams, especially Skype, not so much, but Teams, especially, people tell me, I can't hardly hear you. And so I've been wearing a lav. In fact, I'll show, I don't know where you can see my lav, but I have lav that I've been wearing. So I finally learned about these Q30s. They're $80, right? And I'm too cheap to spend $500 on the new Apple Studio, or even $300 on the, the Bose or whatever. But $80, I can, having already spent $300 on headsets that don't work well, I felt like I could blow. Okay, anyway, $80. I think the sound is pretty decent. It's not as good as a, dedicated USB microphone. But it's, listening back to the podcast last week that John and I recorded, I thought it sounded pretty decent. And Elio, I should note. And the other thing that's really nice is, unlike all the other non-Apple Bluetooth headsets I've bought, this one can pair with multiple devices. So I've got this paired with the MacBook Pro I'm recording on right now, as well as a Windows notebook that I use during the workday. So I can, I don't have to switch headsets. So anyway, $80, Anker Soundcore Live Q30. I recommend it. It's affordable and seems to work pretty well. Noise cancellation is excellent. So there you go. Okay, the next thing is another follow-up is, so my Raspberry Pi 400 arrived, but being the genius I am, I did not check to see what kind of cable it ships with. And it does ship with a cable. I bought the $100 kit that ships with the with an HDMI cable, but it's HDMI micro to HDMI standard, which is, the A port. And you would say, well, what's wrong with that, Todd? That's standard. That's why it's called the standard. Well, I have a portable display that I really wanted to use with it that has a mini HDMI port. And the one cable I don't have is a micro to mini. So I ordered one. It came in a few days and set it up with my Raspberry Pi 400. Works really well. It's like, my very first microcomputer. Back when PC didn't exist yet. No, the personal computer term didn't quite exist yet. My very first microcomputer was a Radio Shack TRS-80 Model 1, you know, the height of technology. And it, too, was a computer and a keyboard, for those old enough to remember. Although it also came with a monitor that, and it was the only monitor it worked with, so you had to buy that monitor. But anyway, it's pretty amazing. It comes with everything else you need. It comes with a mouse, and of course, it, the computer's in the keyboard, so you don't have to buy a keyboard. And it comes with a little power supply. And my my portable display, which is, I think, 15 inches, is USB-C powered. So, you know, it's pretty handy. Although, I don't think you can't power it from. Let me think, is that true? Okay, I need to test this. I need to see if I can do a PD port to a Raspberry Pi 400 and then power the monitor through a USB-C hub, but I'll test that later. The one weird thing I found is that for some reason, Wi-Fi in 5 gig is really slow, you know, 5 gigahertz. And it was like 2, 3, 4 megabits down. And so, and normally I'm sort of between, depending what device I'm using, it's between 50 and 120 megabits down, sorry.
Megabits.
So, you know, I couldn't figure it out. Anyway, I switched it to the 2.4 gig, and it, you know, popped up to about, I don't know, 20, 30 megabits down, which is, you know, more than acceptable. Still a little slow, but, you know, it's 2.4, so what do you expect? It's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, oh, and John, before we get started, John, what are you doing now, John?
Yeah, I had I had a new little toy that I picked up. But first, you know, you were talking about the Raspberry Pi 400.
Yeah.
And your setup sounds very familiar to how I'm using my Raspberry Pi 4 connected to my iPad. Because I talked about this last year where you can actually connect up the iPad directly to the Raspberry Pi 4 through USB-C, and USB-C supports the Ethernet over it, so you can connect up and power it. So when I've got that setup rolling, I kind of have a similar setup to yours. I just have it in an external case, but I'm using the iPad as a display and VNC to connect to it. So it's similar but different, a little bit more portable, but not as cool. I still think the Raspberry Pi 400 looks cooler than what I've got. But speaking of cool things, so I decided this week, I did a little bit of tech review work a few months ago and got paid for it this week. I thought, you know, maybe it's time to try out this whole MagSafe charging with the iPhone. So I picked up Apple's, I have to turn off my screen background here because it doesn't want to show you guys what I'm showing.
Secret.
But I picked up Apple's MagSafe and Apple Watch combo charger.
I didn't know this out.
Together. Yeah. And I heard some good things about it. It was a little pricey. It retails for $129.
Ooh. Wow.
But I wanted it for a couple reasons. One, I've never bought a new Apple Watch charger. I've only had the one from my Series 0 that I've been using forever and ever. So it'd be nice to have another one. Two, I've started charging my Apple Watch before bed, which means most of the time I forget about it and I'm out in the living room and I need a charger out there for the Apple Watch. So I thought, well, I'll take my bedside charger, take it to the living room. That way I'm not having to get up randomly and go put my watch on the charger. Because heaven forbid I move more than I have to. You know, by that time of the night, I've already the rings. So I don't really care to, you know, get more in. The added benefit was when I travel, I wanted to have the faster charging from MagSafe. So right now, though, my big complaint is it doesn't come with a wall wart. So it just comes with the USB-C to Lightning connector. So I did order one. It hasn't shown up. So kudos to Apple for shipping this to me with Sunday FedEx delivery. I didn't really need it on Sunday, but I got it this morning. But I'm waiting on Amazon to ship me the Anker USB-C wall wart for it. But I do like it, and it is, as some reviewers have noted, really tempting to just sit there and, like, click it closed and then open it and click it closed. It also has a nice little picture. So,
you know, John, I didn't even know it was out.
But that's me. I know these things, and I buy overpriced things quite a bit more than you. So, and I did find, speaking of overpriced, that I am really eager to give my own assessment to, I bought used one of the MagSafe wallets because that, you know, the little sleeve that Apple is charging $60 for, which is a little steep. I found it for $40 on Amazon, or not on Amazon, on eBay. And I thought, okay, I'll I'll try it for that. But we'll see. I like the idea of MagSafe making a resurgence, and might as well see how it goes. It is nice over the key charger that it does align, because that is always the big annoyance with keys, getting it just right.
I'm still using the clear case from Apple that I bought when I bought the phone, and it's, I don't know. You got to tell me about the wallet once you, you know, have a chance to play with it a bit.
There's so much, reviews are so all over the place on that thing. Some people are saying it's unabashed with the money. Others are going, well, once you get used to it, it's really nice. Once you realize how, of course with Apple, how you're supposed to use it versus how you think you're supposed to use it. But we'll see. I'm always up for random things. But yeah, that's my tech update for the week of toys. All right.
Okay, on to our main discussion with our buddy Ray Flores. So, Ray, like the other far-flung guests that we've been bringing on to talk with us over the last couple of months now, I guess, is a former Microsoft MVP. And that's how I met Ray many years ago. Boy, it's been a while, Ray. I mean, we were a lot younger. Mm-hmm. But
We had more hair.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Elio was on last week. And John's half the man he used to be. He lost like half of his.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
Watch your progress. Elio, our buddy Elio, who was on the podcast last week, has a tagline that he always uses that I steal. And he says, Elio's tagline, yes. Once we're young and beautiful, once we're young and handsome, now we're merely handsome.
That's right. I remember that. He would comment on our photos there on Facebook.
But anyway, so
I fully support that sentiment.
Yeah. So I think, as I've mentioned earlier, Ray's one of the few far-flung friends I actually saw in person. And if I didn't, I'll say it again. Back in 2017, when my daughter and I went up to the Bay Area where Ray used to be located, and we were able to sync up briefly in downtown San Francisco, and that was really fun. So actually seeing Ray in, less than 10 years, unlike our other friends. When did I last time I saw John in person? Yeah.
Right.
2010, I think, was the last time I saw John in person. That's 2011, maybe? Yeah. At least a decade.
And then I think I last saw you, 2007 or 2008? Was the last time I think I was there in Redmond with you guys?
Yeah, it was a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. My tenure ended a little bit earlier.
Yeah, well, and then we all got so.
Yeah.
In 2011. What have you been doing? I should note, an MVP is most valuable professional, because we keep saying it. I don't think we explain it. It's not an employee of Microsoft. It's in a year-to-year awarded status for people who make contributions to their product lines, sort of on a, it's not really a volunteer, it's just because they're an enthusiast, right? We're enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm. You're a community contributor, be it
that's the one.
Forums or user groups, which I headed a local user group for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I remember way back when they introduced the first Microsoft smartphone for the U.S., the MPX 200, if you remember that.
I still got
mine. We did the launch there in downtown San Francisco, and I was there with the Microsoft reps, and we were giving away the phone that I didn't have yet. Which was an amazing time.
Yeah, it was. It was exciting, and it was a cool product. Windows Phone itself, of course, which it morphed into, that was completely incompatible with the stuff we loved, was a disaster, and now it's gone. But the Windows Mobile and Windows Mobile Phone and the Windows Smartphone, they were all really, really fun stuff and ahead of their time. I mean, Android, I guess, is the closest thing to it now because, it's so open. Windows Mobile stuff, there was no concept of sideloading. You just load. There was no App Store, right? I remember we used to all keep our backup apps on a SD card or something.
SD card.
Yeah, reloading.
Oh, yeah. And then
get our Fandango accounts.
Yeah. Tapping cab files over and over again. You know, new phone, reset the whole thing up, and you're riding in buses around the MVP summit, you know, here and there, and going, oh, yeah, I just loaded that new firmware last night, and you just be tap, 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 add that, tap, 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 you know. Yeah. Those were the weird days. Those were days when you felt like anything, and everything was so monumental. You know, that's the thing when you look at the, I think that's why us old timers, in a sense, are so underwhelmed each year. You know, I'm always waiting for Google and Apple's announcements to be something great, because you have to remember in 2005, it was Wi-Fi was showing up on the devices. And then that's in 2007, it was GPS was showing up on the devices. Mm-hmm. And then 2009, decent cameras were showing up. Capacitive touchscreens were showing up. And then around 2014, we had all the good stuff, and it's just been getting incrementally better by then. But it is, when you're like us, you're thinking, come on, transwarp drive should be next, right? Like, you know, something great should show up this year. And well, maybe that's why we're first rated.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, actually, I want to ask Ray about because of his background, and I'll ask him to intro himself and what he's doing, but I want to talk to you later about the AR stuff on the iPad Pro and the newer iPhones, because I still haven't found a use for it. But anyway,
that makes another one of us. But, I still am rolling with my 2018 iPad Pro and still haven't found a need for getting LiDAR and the improved use with AR.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a readily available option that I want to take advantage of.
Well,
yeah, you and I are the same. We're on the same iPad Pro, so I haven't found one either. So, all right. So, Todd, do you want to start with our...
So,
what have you been up to question?
We went through our MVP, you know, what an MVP is, which we did meet our other friends. So what have you been doing since we last saw you as a group? Like I said, I saw you in 2017, but as a group back in, you know, over 10 years ago.
Yeah. At that time, I was still what did they call me? Oh, yeah, because I'm kind of like that now. A client engineer with UCSF Medical Center.
Ah.
And so I was on the team that first brought the rolling computers connected to Wi-Fi on a few of their hospital floors. And that was an interesting time because, you know, no one's ever seen such a thing. They called them computer on wheels. So it's basically on a full-size computer and monitor. Well, flat panels were just coming out. And they were on wheels, and they connected to Wi-Fi. And then when you weren't using them, they charged into a central area until the next nurse or doctor needed to take it to bedside. Treat patients now. So I was on the team that helped design the images, the desktop icons and security. So a lot of Active Directory work there. And it was interesting because, you know, I said it was called Computer on Wheels.
Yeah.
So they called them CoWs for short, right?
Yeah.
And I heard a few years after I left, UCSF got in a lawsuit about that because when they were referring to bring that cow over here,
right?
A patient
thought that could be a
cow. And so they've had to change that to workstation on wheels. Now they call them wows.
Oh, wow.
From last day, exactly.
You know, it's funny because in the cellular industry, they have a thing called cell on wheels, which is a portable cellular tower, you know, that you bring into sporting events, and we used to see them in places like Comdex and so on. And those are called cows too, but nobody's had a lawsuit about that. Nobody's had a cow about a cow.
And so after that, did a lot of contract work here and there. And then I had a stint at a government explosive agency, which was pretty interesting.
Oh, didn't know about that.
Because, you know, you have to walk around, make sure you didn't set anything off. That was literally something you had to be careful of. And especially one who would carry a mobile device everywhere, you had to remember, leave your tech stuff at your desk when you did your rounds.
Yeah.
But then after that, you know, I did the unthinkable, who was, you know, embedded into everything Microsoft for so long. I then started a career at Apple in 2013, and I was with them for nearly 7 years.
Yeah.
And I purposely wanted to kind of grow some more. I was born into just learning macOS and the up-and-coming iOS and its development. I think that was iPhone 5, iPhone 5S era when I joined them. And so I joined the retail team and eventually became a, got my ACMT through there, my Apple Certified Mac Technician certificate with them, and became a genius. So it was pretty cool to be able to rightfully, when you fill out any application, be it a medical form, insurance form, whatever, and they ask what your title is. Genius. You're not a technician, you're not an engineer, you're a genius.
There
you go. That was a neat time. Yeah. And
that's better than professor. I can tell you right.
Well, you know, okay, I'll tell John a quick story since he might find this amusing. So one of my very old friends who I've known for over 30 years now, probably closer to 40, is a PhD in EE, right? Electrical engineering, PhD in EE. Many, he did all kinds of stuff. And I worked with him briefly when I was at the Tafon company. But at any rate, when he retired, he decided that it would be fun to be an Apple genius. So so he did. And so he spent a few years behind the genius bar. And, you know, there he was, you know, the good doctor, so to speak. You know, a PhD, but still, you know, still a doctor. And anyway, so John, just, you know, post-retirement thoughts for you. You might think he really enjoyed it by the way.
Well, the problem I have is that people ask me, you know, why I picked professor. And I say, well, I promise I could see myself enjoying a ton of different jobs. And so that is, you know, one of those things about certain people. And Ray, it sounds like you've jumped around enough that you had the same thing where a lot of different things were interesting to you and you just wanted to jump in and learn it. I had the same thing around 2014. I didn't become a genius, unfortunately, but I had an opportunity to finally get an iPhone. And I thought, okay, I want to actually experience this ecosystem and see, you know, if it really is as bad as I was always told, or if it, you know, and you find out that it's never one way or the other, you know, pluses and minuses of all ecosystems.
So what happened to Apple, right?
Speaking of that, well, I was just going to segue into my question, but if you want to, we can finish up question one.
Yeah. So what happened after Apple? Where are you now, Ray?
So now I am with VMware. And I've been there, it'll be nearly a year and a half in May. Yeah, that I've been with, working with a couple of our old colleagues, you know, Mike Temporale and Dan Sarcinelli, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was interesting. And like out of the blue, I didn't know Mike had been with VMware until I saw a support ticket come in. Like, hey, I know this guy. And then he was telling me, you know, Don's a contractor with VMware too. Like, I didn't know that. We need to get the whole gang into VMware so we could eventually meet again.
Is Eric there too? Or did I forget? But anyway,
I don't know.
Yeah.
All these stealth VMware people that we didn't realize were wandering over there.
Yeah. So are you enjoying yourself there? I mean,
I am. It's like my role evolved, right? So I'm kind of like a genius for their support team. So now I actually have an actual title, a normal title as a colleague support engineer. So I'm providing like the same level of support, albeit I'm one with the Apple certified certificate, I guess, or I'm Apple certified. And then I can reawaken or reapply some of the stuff I learned back when I was very active in the Microsoft world. So I'm kind of like an internal genius bar or geek squad, if you will, for VMware.
Yeah. So you're like a tier three or something. Yeah.
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 And no longer am I dealing with, like, you know, at the Apple store, you know, you have those, you have that stress factor of dealing with the public at large because you're the public's tech support, right? But you know, when you're internal, it's kind of like back when I was at UCSF. You have a set of people that you're dealing with, and they know your role. And there's an even respect there than you would if you're retail.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's where it's
a tough gig. Cool. Anyway, yeah. John, you were going to say something
before I rudely interrupted? Well, I'll also note Ray noted some of his more public roles that are not tech with gaming and DJing. So how's that been during the last year when a lot of people have started to turn more so? I know you did that before even this, but
yes,
how has that been going for you?
Oh, man, it's a very interesting change. That was something that I wasn't realizing I was going to be able to do again. Because I was DJing back since I was middle school. And that was like 85. In fact, my turntables here is a Technics 1200. I've had this since 85. So it's as old as as long as I've been DJing, and it's still working, and it's in my live sets now when I do those live sets. So yeah, I've been on Twitch doing gaming. And then a few years later, then I said, I should be doing my DJing again. And I was really hesitant because actually in that time that I had not been an MVP up to now, there was a time in between that my records, and I had a ton of records. I had like 5,000 records. And so that equaled like about 43 of these giant crates, these wide, long crates of records. And I lost all but 2 crates into a fire.
Ooh.
Yeah. The one time I said, I was always with my records no matter what, but the one time I decided to put it into a storage unit preparing for a move, a homeless person decided to go into this storage facility. It was cold at night. He started a fire. And guess what? My unit was in one of those areas of fire. So so it was devastating. I didn't think I was going to start DJing yet, so that when I started thinking about, am I going to evolve and get with a program and do like the future of DJing without records? Yeah. I was really hesitant, you know. Granted, I had lost practically my whole library.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when you're a record collector, you know, there's a little bit of blood, sweat, and tears that go with each 12-inch, each piece of vinyl that you buy, whether it's a collector's one or even just a special DJ version of a song. So I remember all the lunches I skipped so that I could buy a record at the record shop. And I remember all the record stores I went to that are no longer around anymore to get some of these special releases, right? So there was a lot of that. But during my time at Apple, I saw younger folks saying they were getting gigs and they were using these newfangled controllers to do such a thing, right? And like, I guess I better try this. And it was at that time that I just started incorporating a bit of DJing and also and my gaming all together on Twitch. So I'm on Twitch, twitch.tv /radio, R-E-Y-D-I-O. It's the same tagline I've been using in my forum posts back in, I think, Pocket PC Thoughts Media, right?
Yeah.
XDA developers. I think you can still Google me on the Pocket PC, old Pocket PC Com Magazine Board of Experts. And so I developed a following of like 90, just short of 9,200 followers.
Wow.
So it's been interesting, especially like you said, this past year, a lot of people are like indoors trying to find a way to go out, and the DJ section of Twitch has just exploded with DJs trying to find an outlet so they can stay sharp. People who've now been inspired and now they're learning how to DJ, and you can see that influence even here in Las Vegas that I recently moved to. There's only 2 guitar centers, and there's 1 DJ shop, and there's another music shop, and the controllers that's probably easy for people to pick up is always sold out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
and how much these controllers cost? I know nothing about this.
They can start at $80 and up.
Oh, it's very affordable.
That's actually not too bad for somebody who wants to jump in.
I think I highlighted one of my earlier streams, and it's a really small controller. I think I have it with me. It's a really small controller here. It can actually fit on the palm rest of your laptop, right over the mouse pad. And will actually fit there, and it gives you like the controls to like manipulate the song speed, and you know you can cue this up with another set of headphones, and it'll play on speakers, or like what I'm doing, I'm sending the signal through a mixer and into my streaming machine and up into Twitch.
Okay, and before I forget, because we don't have this in the question, I just noticed your microphone in the shot. What kind of microphone are you using?
Yes, it's a Blue Yeti.
Nice.
It is. It's the blackout version of Blue Yeti. So.
Nice.
And I've been using this since for quite a few years. I think I started Twitch maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I got into it because I had an operation back then. I had one of four operations that what year, and throughout the year that I was convalescing, I needed to do something, and I started streaming on Twitch.
Yeah.
Just sitting at my desk, had my setup, and I was streaming mobile games or computer games, and then people would come in and they would kind of shoot the breeze with you and also share your gripes and frustrations or even play with you, which was really neat to be able to do at that time, right?
What something game were you playing back then?
That's or a great question. Clash Royale on mobile was the big one. It's a mobile game. It's like a tower defense game. And then just before Fortnite took the world by storm, there was one called King of the Hill.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
And they became King of the Kill or something like that. So it was like one of the earlier renditions of a battle royale type of game that we were playing. So it's you get your team of five and you try to outlast the other teams that are roaming around this desolate field that continuously got smaller and smaller until it was you and the others left, and hopefully you won. So it was neat to be able to use that. Now using technology, you're communicating and playing with people around the world against other people from around the world, which is a great experience.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry, John. I think I interrupted you again.
Oh, no. I just had a ding, so that was probably what came through. But yeah, I love the idea that some of this stuff is getting more accessible, the DJing and the live streaming. And I've had former students that I would have never guessed when, you know, decided to go into the live streaming and the gaming the aspect. So it's a great community that I think is a lot of guys our age don't really quite get why, you know, people are doing that, you know, and there's something therapeutic about it. I think there is a community aspect to it.
There's a great community, especially for some of the very successful ones who may have like hundreds or even thousands of viewers watching them. I have maybe people in the teens that usually, you know, tens or 20 number, talking about number of viewers that watch me at most. Once in a gray moon, I get maybe 100 people or so. It doesn't happen a lot. But you grow the community. You kind of support it with another application called the Discord forums, which also we can communicate via chat or voice the same way here. So you do that in concert with your viewership, be it on Twitch or even, you know, the other big one really is YouTube is the biggest one that's out there. You know, a lot of people make a successful living from YouTube just by garnering all the views that they get.
The thing I love about YouTube creators is that they're passionate about what they're talking about. And that is something that, you know, in the 90s, when cable became much more widespread, you had a cable channel for every interest. But of course, all the shows on it were hosted by television hosts who really didn't care much about what they were talking about. They could be presenting anything on that cable channel. So now we've got not only the equivalent of niche broadcasts, but we've got the actual people who are in love with what they're talking about. And you always get a more genuine response, I think. And plus deeper research and deeper understanding. I mean, there are guys out there that are, and women that are making these really in-depth documentary series based on their love of something. And they're just digging deep and sending it out there. So, and that's why cable companies are scared to death.
Yeah, very true. But well, yeah, so many subjects you can get into.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, Ray, I had a question. You had talked about going into 2014 when you started working for Apple in that era. And I'm just curious, spending so much time there, almost 7 years, what were some of the most surprising or unexpected things that you experienced, either with Apple or with the customers or with the technology or the culture? Kind of what did you learn over that time that you weren't expecting or that you found interesting?
Well, let's see. There's quite a bit. You know, I think the biggest battle I really had was just, you know, to go into Apple with an empty cup and not to let what I know or what I think I know stop me from learning what was there, right?
Yeah.
When I was actually a teenager, I've always wanted a retail job, but I was never classify those as the cool folks who always got into retail. So, you know, I got a restaurant job, which I thought was cool also, because, you know, they're going to have to come visit me anyway.
Yeah.
So you got to eat. I'll hook you up. But so now, you know, here I am in my, I was in my 40s and I'm coming into Apple, and I really didn't know what I was going to get. Okay. I'm in retail. I did work for HP when around, I think Vista was coming up, and I was helping doing some promotion for the iPad. So you would find me at CompUSA or even Office Depot doing weekend demos for some of their product. Oh, so I kind of thought that this was kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
But they definitely wanted to take advantage of my tech. And so I wanted to be a technician, and they started me as a mobile technician. Surprise. But I think the surprising thing was being able to deal with the particular type of customer that would come into San Francisco. That was surprising because, I've had computers thrown at me.
Oh, you mean like
possibly? I've been... physically threatened when they didn't like the options they were provided. I've seen inappropriate content on people's computer that even I hadn't seen in all the years of tech support I was doing.
That is a high bar.
Yeah, it is. It was quite interesting. And man, you really have to build such a tough skin to be.
Oh, yeah.
It just really is a front line.
And Ray, weren't you at Apple Store number one or something akin to it?
Well, the store number is 75, the 75th store. Okay. But it was the first flagship store.
Ah, okay.
And then, of course, when it became a true what they were then divulging as a flagship store, when they reopened Apple Union Square on Union Square as the two-story store with the iconic sliding doors.
Yeah.
You know, that it re-emphasized it more. And, you know, when they opened that store and I was part of that opening, it was an amazing event.
Yeah, yeah. I went to go see Ray there.
Apple stores are interesting. You know, when I was in New York, I got to go to some of the very, you know, the flagship stores in New York City in Manhattan. And that was, it's a different feel than a regular Apple store at a mall. You know,
yeah.
It's just, I always have thought that's a great design aesthetic. And I've recently become very interested in Apple's designs and layout of Apple Park. Because as I teach human factors engineering and other psychology courses, a lot of what they do, whether it works or not, because some of it just doesn't work, is inspired by the research into how people congregate and collect and these incidental activities and interactions and all those things. So they are an interesting company for just jumping right in and saying, let's try this crazy idea of design. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah,
very true. Very true. Yeah. I think people would always try to kind of like be on your side and say, you know, I know we're all just a bunch of beta testers. I'm here to help you.
You're like, you never used Pocket PC in 2002. That was beta testing.
That was beta testing.
Yes, the long beta test that never.
Yeah. Some of it was alpha because, like, ActiveSync never worked.
you think internet, you know, you think mobile hotspot sharing is difficult. Let me tell you about, you know, 2005 trying to route your pocket PC through a Bluetooth dial-up connection over your smartphone, you know, to a GPRS connection where, I mean, that was beta. Yeah. You know, I think about our friend Eric Hicks, you know, building, you know, television streaming before that was even a thing.
That's right.
You know, remoting into his home network and all those sorts of things. That was right. Crazy. And I remember I had lights in 2005 on my house that responded to sunrise and sunset. That was a crazy idea. Now that's two taps away with any, you know, home automation system. Yep. Yeah. That was beta.
I have Hue now. It's
And remember Hue, all the people?
Siri? Oh my gosh.
We used to carry around little kits to take apart hotel phones so they could capture modem directly into the phone system.
Yes. Yes. or do you remember I think Socket had the CF card with a modem.
Yeah.
So you can be cabled to a phone line on your iPad.
I still have one. I still have it. Yeah.
So I remember even doing that back then and trying to convince the execs at UCSF, this might be a worthy tool of getting it. Can we expense one for testing?
this reminds me, Ray. You know, I used to write a kind of a infrequent series called Jurassic Tech for Byte when it was all online. And I think I might revive that just for myself and, you know, do like one card per week. I said, what do you think this is? You know, this is a GPS that goes into a compact flash slot. You know, stuff like that.
And then we evolved to what, Bluetooth GPS devices? You remember those?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? You had to throw it on the dash and hopefully it didn't burn up.
It would take six minutes to acquire enough satellites to be useful.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You need at least three. And you always found two really good ones, and you're struggling for that third one.
Yeah. Hey, kids nowadays, man, they just turn on their phone and their GPS works. You know, in our day.
Yeah.
Back when I used GPS.
Yeah.
I remember my first GPS was on a Palm M500. Wow. It was a backpack for the Palm. And I remember walking up and down the street just going, this is really cool. I can't do anything with it yet because there's no maps.
Right.
I mean, it's literally where you started. You can get back to there.
Yeah.
You can set a waypoint. That was a time when I think there was just so much, and there's still so much possibilities ahead of us. We just don't appreciate them at this point, but it was very visible that you were living in an up and coming time in 2000 to 2010 or so when it came to mobile technology.
Yeah. I was going to say,
one of the first ones I think was Copilot.
Yes.
And I was using that, and I was walking around the neighborhood with my laptop and this Bluetooth device. I was trying to see, is this accurate? Wow, it really knows where my house is. It really knows where the store is. I was looking around.
And you had
to
download the maps ahead of time because there was no cell signal or Wi-Fi.
Right. You had to get like maps along your route.
Right.
So I would test it on my summer trips to Disneyland from the Bay Area, and I would download all the maps in between.
Oh, that must have taken some space.
Yeah.
On those tiny
Heaven
computers.
Heaven forbid you get lost.
Yeah.
So
what are you using?
And still having a Tom's Guide next to me, just in case.
So what are you using these days? Which phone? What's your phone of choice?
Right now, the iPhone 12 Pro Max.
Oh, you and John make me jealous. I have the Pro, non-Mac minimum, I guess. But as I told John, the reason is, you know, I've hyperextended my thumb so many times on large phones, I decided not to go with large phones anymore.
Sure.
Not that the Pro is small, but it's, you know, smaller, so less likely to hyperextend my thumb.
I thought the 10 was a great design. And if we go from there, you know, great design and size. And then from the 11 or the 10, 10S, 11, and now 12, right? I regret upgrading from the 10 to the 10S. And then from the 10S, I went to the standard 11, which I regret that too, but it was a great value. I couldn't know. It was one of the last things I bought before I left Apple. and then And then I said, okay, that's it. I'm going to go back to a Pro Max or something.
Yeah. I wish I had the Zoom of the Pro Max in mind.
Yeah. So
The Pro Max, the extra Zoom on the Pro Max, Todd, did come in handy for me this last couple of days because we had a street cave in, and I was able to get closer up shots of it.
I saw that.
Behind the barrier. Yeah, that was a fun one where, it was a leak that no one noticed until the whole street just kind of collapsed in around it. But just another day. And yesterday night, they parked a giant earth mover on next to it because they were clearing it out. And I told my wife, well, that's how we find out if the rest of the street is stable. If it's still there tomorrow morning, we know that the rest of it's okay. And if not, then it's rotted out and, we need to expand our area to fix it. Mississippi logic. But yeah, the Pro Max, I've been very happy with the Pro Max as well because it's big, but it's big enough and not horribly big. Even though it's around the same dimensions as when I had the 7 Plus and the 6 Plus, it doesn't feel as much wasted space as the 7 Plus and the 6 Plus because of the 10 screen layout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No more buttons, no more lines. Yeah, I agree there. And it harkens back with that flat edge back to the F5 series,
Oh, yeah.
They just rotate through that design language. It's like the 4 and 5 get the flat edge. Then we'll go round for a while like the original. And then we'll go back to the flat edge. Keep the case manufacturers on their toes.
Yeah.
Hey, they got to earn their keep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Like so many phones in my bag.
Oh yeah. I remember the good old days going through airport security at SeaTac and having to empty out my Scotty vest where I had 10 different devices.
Yep.
And it took me helping the TSA agent. It took us like 5 minutes to get everything out, and then it took me a minute to get it all back in. I knew where all the pockets were, but. Those are interesting days.
I recently used my Scotty vest on the trip too. And then I was realizing I hadn't used it since like the last Macworld. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, whoa, I'm only using like 5 pockets. I'm not using like 10 or 15 of them anymore.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I think what I had my wallet in one of my side pockets, and for some reason, somewhere in transit, it got flipped upside down, and then when it flipped right back up, so the wallet had kind of traveled up the vest, back to the collar, and into the other pocket. And now when I was reaching for the pocket, it's on the inside. I'm like, wait, how did I get it in there? I had to figure it out. Wait, what? Are they connected? And then I had to... People saw me at the airport kind of flipping my vest around.
Yeah. And they made a lot of room for you, right?
Yeah. I was like 1 minute away from just ripping the vest apart to get that wallet out.
I have some, the newer Scotty vests are a little less crazy in their designs and connected. And I have a hoodie right now that I bought just a few months ago that I've been using. But even though I've downsized in physical size, I just can't get rid of some of the giant ones that I have that have the 40 some pocket combos. Yeah. They're in storage, and hopefully I'll never be big enough to need them again. But they are just works of design amazement to go through and see all the different pockets, sub pockets, third level pockets. Yeah.
Well, Scotty vests and jackets aren't very practical in Hawaii, but I have bought a few for traveling, and I bought one when I went to go visit my daughter when she was in the UK, and we went up to Scotland, and that thing had a pocket big enough for an iPad. So sometimes, sometimes I would be somewhere, and we'd be standing around. I'd pull a full iPad out of my jacket, and people go, what?
I think that the biggest pocket was on the back, so I had to pull.
Yeah, I just pulled out of my back. I killed a Kindle that way. Was using that back pocket for a first gen Kindle back in 2010 or 2011. And I was using that back pocket, and I must have just sat down the wrong way and put too much weight on it. Thankfully, the Kindle was under warranty, and it was still, I got a warranty replacement for it.
Oh, nice.
I kind of got leery of the back pocket after that.
Mine was actually a side pocket, and it fit. It was,
I have the Yeah. The ones now have the side pocket. I use that at campus where I'll walk into a classroom and just pull out my iPad and get ready to go. And I'll probably freak out half the, you know, students.
Yeah, I think my model also, it could hold the iPad mini fine in one of the inside pockets up front, but it had the bigger pocket in the back where they would say, you can put a tablet PC back there. I'm like, oh, no.
Then you got this if you don't want it to work ever again, you can put a tablet PC.
It's definitely a place.
Yeah.
Okay, and speaking of laptops and tablets, so what do you mentioned earlier using a 2018 iPad Pro. What are you using for notebooks these days?
So for work, I'm doing a 2018 MacBook Pro 15-inch, the one with a T2 chip, the dreaded T2 chip. And then my streaming device, which is somewhere behind me, it's an Asus Republic of Gamers PC that it's actually a 17-inch gaming desktop replacement, but I reserved all that horsepower just to handle my Twitch streaming, streaming. And then I have a standard CyberPower gaming PC. So it's like a two computer setup when I do a stream like that.
Nice. And your watch of choice?
The Apple. Series 4. Yeah. Oh, I forgot. I have my MacBook Air 2013 is back here. That's actually running my DJ software.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and that's a thing, right? So a 2013 MacBook Air is not almost 8 years old, and it's probably still fine. That's amazing.
It's still fine running High Sierra.
You know, they just last forever. I've still got a 2007 iMac I'm looking at right now. It still runs. I mean, you can't update it to anything, but it still runs.
No, I think I have a 2008, and it's running well as a Windows computer. And so they make great Windows computers. If Mac OS 10 won't run on them anymore, it'll just boot camp into Windows. And it's just fine.
Yeah. What kind of internet connection do you folks over in the great state of Nevada have? Probably better than I have.
Well, not many choices, I'll tell you that. It's very sad in that sense. But at the moment, I'm using Cox Cable as my internet provider. And so I'm paying for their Gigablast, which is very much like Xfinity, Comcast.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, you know, the hardware is the same, the advertising the same.
Yeah. Elio just got a gig, or not just, but he's had gig over in Israel for a while now. And I was telling him, you know, here in my neck of the backwaters, I get, which used to be great, you know, I get about 110, 120 megabits down. And he goes, oh, yeah. I remember that. No, he wasn't condescending. But I know that's what he was thinking. You know? Oh, you poor people in the U.S. If only you had broadband.
He was getting 25 megabit.
Yeah.
Shoo, shoo.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I uploaded, you know, the Google Photos is going to stop allowing unlimited high resolution, not native resolution, but high resolution uploads later this year, in this summer.
Yeah.
And so to prepare for it, I
heard about your journey and your struggle.
Yeah,
with it.
It took a whole week to upload just one phone, not all my photos, but just, you know, my iPhone 12 Pro, everything on there, which inherited everything from all my other iPhones. And so that took a whole week, Sunday to Sunday, to finish out. So, about 17,000 photos maybe at 10 megabits up, generally speaking.
Yeah. Even here, when I was in the Bay Area, I was with Sonic, and I had
I heard good things 100 up.
Yeah, and I had 100 up, I think, if I'm mistaken. And I missed that because only over here, although I'm getting like a gig down, I'm only getting 35 up.
Which is still good. Yeah. So
it's still good. But, you know, I kind of want to get my money's worth. Because they charge way too much money here for a gigabit. Right.
And before you
in the Bay Area for Sonic, for gigabit, you paid $50 a month. And here you're paying like $130.
And before you ask, Ray, why I'm not using iCloud, I am. I just like having two cloud providers.
I wasn't going to question that. That's not so my role anymore.
But you know, John, you know, the person who makes me keep spending money, even though I'm getting close to retirement. John convinced me. I mean, he didn't, it wasn't a sales job. I just sort of listened to John and he said, "Oh yeah, it makes sense." So I got Apple One.
I'm that good of a salesman without trying.
Yeah. So I've got, I guess, a terabyte of storage now. So you know, it's, and all my Apple photos go up there. So I'm kind of happy. But what I don't have is full consolidation of my Google photos to someplace else. So I got to work that out somehow.
I'm probably going to be doing a similar similar export. I have about 13,000 songs that I'm actually going to separate from iCloud Music onto. I haven't decided what my outside storage of choice is going to be yet. But I'm a member of a DJ like a group.
Yeah,
not like the playing group, but just like I guess a user group, if you will. Yeah, and we're doing a library cleanup challenge these next 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And so one of the things we know we need to do is that if we were all entrenched into iTunes Music still, which a good majority of my collection is, we need to get it off of there and put it in one master folder. Mm. And so I'm going to have to take that up, and maybe Dropbox is looking like it's going to be my choice for offsite storage for that. Yeah, because it's interesting. There are DJ softwares out there that actually will interface with Dropbox directly, so you don't have to worry about downloading stuff to your computer. It can actually just send it to your Dropbox, and then your DJ software connects to Dropbox, and you don't have to worry about losing your songs when you're at location or traveling. You just have to connect to your collection online. So, so I'm going to see how that works out. So, wish me luck.
So you're not going to go there. Our buddy
anytime
Eric's...
you're doing a cleanup, you always. Yeah.
What was that?
I was just going to say, anytime you're doing a cleanup, it's always.
We lost John for a minute. John froze. Oh, I think everybody froze. Oh.
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, John is starting to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm back.
Yeah, okay. Now you're back.
I hear you both. Yeah. I was gonna say that Ray's not going to go the route our buddy Eric did. If you remember way back when, this is like in, you know, 15 years ago, Eric being Eric, he set up two VMware clusters or whatever the equivalent was back then in two geographically separate sites and was backing up, you know, each one to the other. But anyway.
Yeah, well, my MacBook Air is still like that because that device still supports target disk mode. And so I have two drives. I have one that I'm using, and I have a second one that's always in my DJ backpack that has a clean copy of macOS with just a DJ software. So if this drive goes bad, I just swap drives and boot into that, and I'm up and running again. Nice. So I do miss that. I mean, you can still do it in the current model. Well, at least as of the 2018/2019 MacBook Pro 13s, you can still turn off that security feature, but I've also always had difficulty turning that off so that I can re-enable target disk mode to work.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't even looked to see what the M1 handles. I bought a MacBook, is it an Air? Whatever the cheap M1 is, and the least expensive one. And it's an awesome device, by the way, Ray, if you haven't played with one.
I'm going to look at one of those newer Mac Minis with it. I'm going to try and check that out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that would be even cheaper, right?
Yeah. Sven Johansson bought one, and it's been working out well for him, I believe. Yeah. All right. Anything else you got?
You know, we were talking about Apple stores. We were talking about Apple stores. And then I was reminiscing about CompUSA and all of that. But, you know, we should talk about fries.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If I had a hat on, I'd take it off.
Week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is sad.
So
suddenly shut
down.
It is
a very sad thing. I mean, there are people saying, you know, with stores like Apple stores that help nail Fry's coffin. And there is a little bit of truth. I probably can personally, you know, go along with that, but it wasn't just Apple.
Yeah.
But, you know. That was my next go-to for other electronic components since there's no more Radio Shack. right? And no. CompuUSA was getting bad, so Fry's was really the last hope.
Well, the only one I can think of left is Micro Center. There's still 25 of them around, so we can hope that they stick around for a little while longer.
Right. They used to have one in Santa Clara, but that has closed a long while back. So I think the nearest one is Southern California to me. I think there's still one.
Tustin, California has a Micro Center. There are 25 of them left. And so if anyone who's listening to this doesn't know what we're talking about, go to a Micro Center, because that's about the closest thing of how Best Buy used to be, how CompUSA was, how Fry's was, where it was actually a place where you could find anything you needed, whether it be mainstream or obscure, and talk to people who knew what they were talking about.
Yeah. We never had a Fry's in Hawaii. I mean, the Fry's was very limited regionally. I think California, Washington, Texas. I went to the one in Texas. I don't know if there are any others, but those are the three states I recall. I don't think there was one in Oregon.
Yeah. Nevada. Or I think there was one in Oregon.
Was there?
There's one in Oregon, too.
And, so, you know, I have some memories just because everybody used to talk about it and I'd make a pilgrimage there, you know, when I was near one. But, I still have my pocket protector from Fry's, which is sealed in plastic, you know, to preserve it.
I think it used to be like hanging from the end cap. Do you want a pocket protector? I remember that. I think the last time they were really the Fry's that I can say that, you know, everyone remembers is I still got my Nintendo Switch there when it launched. They were still carrying all new stock at that time. But these past couple of years, it's just been really sad. When you go there, it's just a shell of its former self. You know, more no-name brands than actual name brands when you went there the past three, four years.
Yeah. So Fry's, 35, 36 years? It was around for a while.
Yeah. I think the history is that it started in Sunnyvale as one of the many Fry's supermarkets, and then it was finally sold off to another supermarket chain, and then finally was taken over by Kroger's that took over, you know, Fry's supermarkets from Arizona on east. And then from there, it was the Fry's brothers who decided they're each getting $1 million from that deal. Yeah. And they decided, let's put our $1 million into a technology supermarket.
Didn't they still have food in there sometimes, like snack food?
Yeah, they would have cafes.
Yeah.
Those cafes, because I definitely would spend at least an hour or so in that store just wandering the aisles. That thing exists. I could use that. You know, the only store that I went to that didn't have a cafe was the one in Campbell. And I think that one had an Egyptian theme. But all the other Fry's stores I went to had cafes in it.
Yeah, long gone. Computer City, CompUSA, Radio Shack. Is Radio Shack completely? No, I guess they're around someplace. I don't know where.
They have an online presence, but it's not the first place you think of anymore.
Yeah. I made a pilgrimage to CompUSA number 1 in Addison, Texas. I don't know if I ever told you that. But
no.
Yep. I used to go to Dallas every month. One visit, I said, you know, CompUSA isn't that far from here. So I took the 635, you know, the one with the infamous huge pileup a few weeks ago, and headed up to Addison. But, yep. And Incredible Universe, if you remember those.
Radio yes, Jack. I remember. There was one in Sacramento. That was the closest one to me. But by the time I was old enough to go visit that place, Fry's had bought it up.
Yeah. I think they bought the one near Dallas, too, which was in, in Plano? No, south of Plano. But anyway, somewhere in that area.
It was like a Best Buy, and if Best Buy and Radio Shack had a love child, that's what Fry's was. <Yeah. laughs> at the size of a Target, you know.
and if you don't know, you know, where John lives now in Mississippi, there's like nothing. There's no Apple store. Did you guys get a Starbucks?
Yeah, we have one Apple store in Jackson, Mississippi. So that's 2 hours from me. And then I can get to the Memphis store, which is 2 hours in the other direction. We have a brewed by Starbucks in town now, which, you know, is a fake Starbucks. So, I'm in the middle of nowhere. But, You know, it just makes it more more exciting when I actually get to go to an Apple store. And the funny thing is, I've been wanting to get to an Apple store because I bought, well, prior to backing the Mudra band for my Apple Watch that we talked about a few weeks ago, I bought a Solo Loop band and then lost enough weight that the Solo Loop is now too big. So I was going to buy another one so I could get to a store and try out the different sizes. But, you know, that's the one peril of being half the man I used to be is good problem. But now I'm thinking I'm going to hold off on all band purchases until I get the Mudra band, because if it actually works the way they say, though, I don't see myself wanting to use anything else.
I was looking at that myself. I was considering that. So I'm anxious to hear when you get it what your thoughts will be on it.
It'll be fun to take. Well, I'll you know, once we get it, maybe we'll reach out and try to have you on again, and I can talk more about it, because it's a cool idea. But again, just like when we had the keyboards that were the infrared keyboards, the laser keyboards, and stuff like that, it's one of those. I'm always leery of new input devices.
Yeah.
You know, is it actually going to be the way that it says it's going to be?
I mean, did you see that? It looked like a skeletal glove, but it was like rings that went on your fingers, and you can type with one hand on the ear.
Yeah. I had a bid.
I don't get it.
That was winning for a half a week on that one. And then someone outbid me, and I thought, okay, I'm not gonna bid this one up. But I had at least put a bid on it because I thought maybe it would be worth trying out.
I tried it on demo at a beta store. It's spelled B, the number 8 T A, in Palo Alto. There's a beta store off of University, and I tried it, and it was interesting. It was much more than, like, I don't know if you guys remember the frog pad, which was a one-handed keyboard that they showed at one of the MEDCs one time. But it was just like positioning of the hand, and it was up and down, and it was really interesting.
Does it provide any kind of tactile or vibration or anything to help you, or is it just purely you're in the air?
You're purely in the air. I think there's a little bit, I can't remember anymore, but you're training with, like, it's almost a game-like interface. You know, kind of, what was that game we used to play on Palm where you had to graffiti the letter as the letter?
Remember that? That was just in terms of a cool way to introduce a novel input method, Palm turning that into a game was a great idea. I do remember those things. Man.
Yeah, so they had some kind of game in that sense that you would learn all the different punctuation and uppercase, lowercase, and numbers like that too. But I can't remember I can't truly remember if there was tactile feedback.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm curious to keep watching this stuff. That might be our next revolution over the next 10 years, is just input devices. Because we're getting close enough, you know, and as a psychologist, I have a lot of colleagues who are interested in the different headbands. You know, the Muse headband is the one that most people know about, where, you know, you could start using different ways to communicate to your computer what you want. Obviously, the home assistants and the different assistants like Siri and Google and Alexa, they're all trying to do some of that as well. So it's all going to be an interesting coming together of it, I think, over the next 10 years.
Yep. Okie dokie. Well, that brings us to the end of Movies Podcast, whatever the heck this number is, 353. We've done a lot of them, you know.
Yeah, 353, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Ray. We'll have you back on again sometime. We're kind of cycling through a lot of friends who we haven't talked to in a long time. And I know we've been wanting to talk to you, and, you know, just scheduling never was quite right. But thank you for making time to in a chat with us. It's been great talking to our long, not long lost, but our far-flung friends who haven't actually talked to.
Yeah, great talking to you guys again, too. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All righty, folks. 353 is in the can. We will talk to you next time.